Hi, everybody. How are you? Welcome to New Jersey Revolution Radio. We're live streaming here on Facebook. We are also recording our podcast today. And with me is a good comrade of mine, Jessica Clayton. Hi, Jessica. How are you?
Hi.
So Jessica has been on Wine, Women, and Revolution before, so you may have heard her on Heather's broadcast. We thank her for all that participation, but I've been dying to interview you, her, ever since she got elected to the school board down there in Brick. So I'm excited to have this conversation. It's been a long time coming. It's just scheduling. We're busy people, and we've tried to get together a couple of times, but we can do it, kids and all that. We got through it, though. So she's also a Green Party member. And she is right now helping to organize and been one of the most active organizers I've ever seen in my life. Right now she's working on the March for Peace, which is going to happen on September 15th. So we're going to talk about all that tonight. Jessica, thanks for being here.
Anytime.
Before we get into it, I want to let people know that they can help fund NJRR like a number of other people have. We've gotten some anonymous donations over the last couple weeks. I asked people, can I read your name on the air? And they said, nah, I don't want to be out there. I think they're just being humble, but they did say they'd get back to me with some plugs for some events, so I promised them that. If you're a donor to NJRR, we'll treat you like as best we can, like family. You don't have to give money, but you know, if you are listening, and we do know people are listening, I can see that people are visiting the website, so if you're one of those people that's enjoying New Jersey Revolution Radio, please chip in. Go to the website, hit the Make a Contribution button. A couple of bucks helps. A couple of bucks a month really helps because we can budget for how much is coming in. We appreciate that. So, Jessica, we're going to get into it. You're on the school board. You can hear my kids in the background a little bit as they may make some noise during the broadcast, but I'm recording from home. This is a home-based podcast, so it is what it is. Why did you run for school board? I know, but you got an interesting story about why you got into this in the first place.
Yeah, well, so how I got into it was because I have a Girl Scout troop, and my Girl Scouts kept talking to me about losing their recess, like over and over. It was like an issue every day. Somebody was running, and then the whole class lost 5 minutes off the recess, and then, you know, they kept getting punished by loss of recess, but I'm a nature play school teacher. I run an outdoor school. So for me, getting kids outside every day is super important. And the kids only get like 30 minutes of recess in Brick, which is actually better than some schools, but still not great. And when they keep shaving off 5 minutes here and 10 minutes here, then, you know, it hurts. It hurts the kids. And they were talking to me all about it. So I went to the school board meeting and I prepared this whole speech. And I was like, I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to help out my troop leader whose daughter was losing recess, and she lost her recess for something ridiculous. It was like forgetting to sign her name on her paper, and she's in first grade.
Wow.
So we went, we talked to them, but nothing really changed. So I decided to run. I thought, you know, I'm a Green. I can be a candidate. You know, I can do this. And this is something I feel strongly about. I'm an educator. So I did it. And, we spent a lot of time in the community, like pretty much from August all the way through the election, at least something every weekend. I was at an event and we canvassed a lot. And some little radio commercials at the end, bought a couple signs, not that many, you know, but I talked to people a lot.
Yes.
So, I guess it worked because I got more votes than on the other candidates.
You did. Nonpartisan election, but you did very, very well in it. And you ran, like you said, a bottom-up campaign. So I think it's a very inspiring story. One of the things, you know, I think is a little bit lacking in the Green Party is highlighting success and highlighting what Greens do when they run campaigns and when they run for office and what they do when they're not doing that kind of stuff. The activism that we're all involved with is really important. I'd like to hear a little bit more about your background. I don't know how much you've gotten into it on the other programs, but as you said, you were an educator. Can you tell us about your education background?
Yeah, so I taught I'm preschool to third grade certified and K-5 certified, and I taught mostly in Trenton and New Brunswick, which are the Abbott districts. So, and I taught mostly in classrooms for children who were 3 and 4, and they were mostly all bilingual classrooms. And when my daughter was born, I decided to open my own daycare for my house. I run a family childcare. And then a couple years after I started, I attended this nature preschool conference, which was amazing and taught me about like how important it is to get kids outside and playing outside and being outside and Richard Louvre and all the great things that we could do outside, and how education doesn't necessarily have to happen in a classroom, that it can be happening outside too. So then I became like a nature preschool teacher.
Cool. You know, for those of us that are lucky enough to follow your Facebook page for a while now, it's inspiring. You know, I've seen a lot of bad things about Facebook in the news recently, and there's a lot of critique in Russia. But, you know, looking at following people like you, has really made me think about parenting more. You know, made me think about how my children are being educated more. And one of my kids actually had part of a recess taken away from him. And right away, honestly, I don't think I would have thought about it if it wasn't for you and your effort. You really raised awareness in me of the detrimental effects of that. Let's get into that. Why is it bad? Listen, you know, you go outside, you play every day. It's a privilege. I think the general school of thought that's coming from is, hey, if you're not doing what you're supposed to do to work in school, then you're not supposed to get this fun time of recess. What's wrong with that thing?
So the idea is fundamentally flawed, because the kids who get in trouble in school need to move more than the kids who are following directions. But everyone needs recess. But the kids who are going to get in trouble at school usually get in trouble for talking, which you can do at recess, moving around too much, which you can do at recess, and challenging behaviors, not following directions. So all those things, all those lessons are learned during recess. So if you take away their recess, they're never going to, like, recess time is all about play, right? So what kids do when they're playing is they come up with a plan, what they're going to, their intention, but then they butt heads about it. Like, I want to be a Superman. Well, I want to be a cat. Like, how are we going to make my wanting to be a cat and my wanting to be Superman come together in one story? It's conflict management. When you take away kids' recess, you take away their time to do conflict management. So if they're the ones who are getting trouble in school, and you're taking away from their chance to actually like build the skills that they need to get better at conflict management so that they don't get in trouble at school so much. And the same thing goes for the talkers and for the kids who need more social time. They need to go to recess to talk. If we take away their talking time, then they're going to spend more time in class talking. So that's why it's fundamentally flawed. You can't take away recess. Plus, all of us need a break. Like, that's like another really big thing. Like, our just like the way people learn, like our neurobiology. You need to learn for a little while. Like 45 minutes is good for kids. You take a 40 minutes of getting really learning, and then you need to step back and break. If you don't get recess, you're not getting a break. Your brain's not like turning off. So then it's not moving information from short-term memory to long-term memory, because it needs a break in order to do that.
You know, who the hell knows that unless they listen to teachers who are speaking out? I'll tell you that. I really, honestly. So again, just not something that I was not a teacher. So, and I was just a first-time parent. You know, my oldest just graduated high school. So I never realized it until you spoke out about it, and it speaks to, you know, a lot of other issues where we should be listening to teachers more, I think. It's not just education. There's issues of poverty and crime and drugs and all kinds of things that teachers experience in working with kids. So, you know, I appreciate what you do, and I'm glad that you're outspoken. And
I think the other thing is teachers like to learn. So we spend more time learning about what we do. You know, so we read books and stuff about teaching and about kids and stuff. So we learn, we're educators because we like being educated.
It's true. And you know me, I like to blow things up into that macrocosm of looking at our whole society and saying capitalism sucks and blaming capitalism. One of the things I blame is charter schools when I look at it. Do you still see their influence in your work at all, or just kind of generally in statewide? Do you see them as a negative influence continually?
Well, sure. But I don't have charter schools in BRIC, so luckily it doesn't really affect me. But I can see why some parents want to send their kids to charter schools when their home public school is really not performing the way they want it to. So they're like, oh, there's this other option and I can do this. Except the problem with charter schools is they're not regulated. So they don't take everybody. They're not all inclusive, and they don't run by the same rules. So their numbers look better because they're not taking all the same students to the public schools. And what it does is it takes good students away from public schools and brings them to the charter schools and leaves behind all the kids that could have been pulled up by those kids who are now in a totally different school. Like the people who could have been their mentors have now like exited the system. Yeah, charter schools.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I don't expect the whole world to leap on board with my overthrowing capitalism idea overnight. But there are certain things that we just need to take the profit motive out of. And I think basic necessities like medical care, food, and housing are amongst those. But education is one of those things, too, where we just, the profit motive shouldn't have a place in shaping young people who we want to grow up to be doctors and lawyers, but artists and musicians and... You know, you're cutting music out of schools, you're doing things based on a profit motive. It's just not going to work out when you're trying to groom young minds. You know, I think it'd be much better off making sure that those things that do work in charter schools work in public schools, and that's it. You know? I mean, I think if you want to go to a private school, again, you're rich, got to pay for it. But our public schools should be taken care of first.
Right. And the other thing, I mean, you know, take corporations out of education, we got to mention the standardized tests, you know?
Yes. That's a whole nother one. You want to get into standardized tests before I leave?
We can. I talked about that on the other show a lot, but
okay. So, you know, we all know the BS, and that's another thing. Well, I'll just keep riding the same horse that profit. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make money by testing our kids. I really don't think they care if our kids are smarter or not. I don't think that matters. It's just my theory. I'm a little cynical. So you come into this thing, you're a little bit of a rabble rouser. You're a peace activist. You put together marches, you get up and, rail about, different societal issues. Now, when I think of school board, I think of the career politician in training, the younger politician who's getting his foot in the door, her foot in the door and saying, hey, I'm going to climb the ladder and one day I'm going to be president. You know, the, Parks and Recreation, type theory. And then there's really good people on school boards, community activists, you know, guys that coach Pop Warner and Little League and things like that, and just want to do something good, and they volunteer. You're neither of those. You're a green. You're an activist. How have you been received? Let's start by the I want to ask you both by your colleagues on the board and your community. How have you been received? I'll let you pick which one you talk about.
Well, so, I mean, I don't know how I'm being received in the community. All I know is that the people voted for me. So obviously, like, the message resonated. Nobody comes to talk to me specifically while I'm, like, on the board as the board member. You know, no one says, like, hey, Jessica, what do you think about this? I have not been called out at all, except for my very first meeting.
Yes. I couldn't. I'm careful.
But other than that, that was the only time when they said I shouldn't have, I said, come the first Green Party member elected. And I was, shouldn't have said that because it's a bipartisan election and it's a bipartisan position. I didn't realize. Oops. But other
still,
than that,
I'm still proud of you for having them say Green Party.
Oh, before we get too far into the interview, I have to give my disclaimer.
Okay.
So even though I'm on the Board of Education in BRIC right now, I am not acting with the authorization of the board. I'm not representing the board. I'm just talking to you as me, Jessica Clayton.
Good. You know, I don't want to interview school board members anyway. You're much more interesting.
And so in terms of how I've been received on the board from the... you know, the administration and the other board members. I mean, I talk to them in committees and I give all my like strong opinions about education. And I don't know, I wonder if it's really making an impact, you know, like what all these things that I'm saying and rallying for, no homework and more recess but things are happening. So things did happen. When I first got elected, they told me they're no longer taking recess away as punishment, which is great.
Yeah.
And also, the state just passed legislation that says all students in New Jersey have to have 20 minutes of recess. You can't use recess for gym. You have to have both things. You have to have recess and gym. And you can't take it away from punishment. Unless it's an extreme case of bullying. So, well, that's good news.
Yeah, it's very good. Now, if I understand it, too, they had done some recess activity before you got sworn in, right? So your campaign in and of itself.
My campaign, hopefully, I think, might have actually had effect on policies in BRIC, because right when I first got elected, they said that they weren't going to do that anymore. So I was pretty excited.
That's awesome. Was there a bit was there a party that, like, oh, what do I do now? Like, that was my big issue. I was gonna carry this flag down the street about, you know, but you show up to your first meeting, they're like, ah, we did that already.
Yeah. But, you know, so I had some other things. So the other thing that I wanted, so I was like, okay, so let's try right now. We are in the process of deciding for the district what counts as an A, what counts as a B, what counts as a C across the board in all the schools. And one of the things that you need to do for that is decide how much homework counts for. And I really, one of the things I advocate for is like no homework in elementary. I don't want kids to have to come home when they're really young, when they need to be playing, when they need to get outside, when they need to have fun after school and talk with their friends. I don't want them to be caught up doing a lot of homework. I would like them to just read with their parents at night before bed every day and not have to sit down and have this whole like argument about I have to do this ditto and I have to do my spelling work. And so good news is another good thing that came out of this is that our percentage of the amount that homework is going to count for is going to be hopefully looking leaning towards very low. They're not going to count like 20% of the grade for homework. It's going to be much, much drastically lower than that. So I'm really excited.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, we talked a little earlier, again, with my kids, you know, and the consciousness that you've brought to me. You know, my second oldest was like really stressed out, at the end of school last year. And I kind of just told him, don't worry about it. I don't care what your grades are. I don't really care if you do bad on a standardized test. I love you and you're fine. And that brought a lot of relief to him. I think that school was really stressing him out. Now he's 11 years old at the time. We don't need to be stressing 11-year-olds out. My 11-year-old son should not be in my kitchen worried that he can't go to bed because he has to still study, you know, for this big test tomorrow. Go to bed, dude. Play some video games. Have some fun. Go out and play in the yard. You know, I mean, I'd really rather have my kids doing that. And I think I've learned that's going to make them smarter and more successful in the long run than, you know, having panic attacks and being on Lexapro by 15.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want them stressed out. That doesn't help anyway, because if kids are constantly stressed out, they get like trauma, and then their brain always goes back to the stress. So anytime when kids are consistently stressed out over and over and over again, they're going to stay stressed out all the time, and it's going to affect whether or not they can even sleep at night. You know, and a whole bunch of things about their health. So it helps, it affects them all over. So we got to not stress out kids.
Right. Let's keep making people think about that, sister. I'm with you. Mm-hmm. Now, we are coming up on an event. Not only are you a school board member, but you're continuing to be an activist. And we've got a march coming up called the March for Peace.
That's right.
What's going to happen?
So we are meeting in Toms River outside the Ocean County Library, and we are going to do a march. We're going to march all around the Toms River Library, and then we are going to meet back outside of the courtyard and listen to everybody talk about peace and why it's so valuable. And it's another nonpartisan event. I invited everyone, yes. Anyone that a politician or a candidate running anywhere in Ocean County, they got invited to the march. So I invited, like, I even invited some people who are no longer running, and we'll see if they come too. But I invited like Cory Booker, and I brought in Bill Murphy, and I invited Wolf and McGuckin and Hosoffel, which are our local state Senate and assembly legislators. I invited all the Senate candidates, Hugan and Menendez and Madeline Hoffman, who is coming. So I'm excited. You have one politician coming so far.
And that politician is
a Green Party.
A Green Party. Yeah, of course. Tell me. Well, we know each other. Republicans don't care about peace as much as Greens.
Oh, yeah.
So no, any responses from any of the politicians yet? How long have they had the invites?
Cory Booker said that because the Green Party was helping to organize it, ethically, he could not come. But not because he didn't want to. He definitely said that, you know, he would have been there. But it is a really busy time, and he actually does have another, already set up, had something else on that day anyway. But he did want to come. He just couldn't because the Green Party was helping to organize it. He felt like it was not nonpartisan because we were helping to organize it.
It's multipartisan.
I invited everyone.
It's multipartisan. That's multipartisan. That's mm-hmm. what we're looking for, a multiple party system, right? We want Greens to be involved.
Yeah. And a lot of people said that. A lot of people said that they didn't want to endorse, but a lot of people are coming anyway. Even if they belong to different groups, they're all going to show up at the march and be at the march and listen to the speakers. We have a lot of speakers from all different groups, including you, Brian.
That's right. I still got to send you my little snippet. I will. I promise you. I owe you a bio.
You do.
I have not forgotten. And I look forward to speaking. Thank God my back's been feeling better, so I'm going to make it. Looks like so far so good. Now, I want to dig in a little bit because, you know, I like to beat up Democrats and Republicans a lot. But I'm hearing that people want to get involved but not want to be associated with some of the other groups. It's going to bother me, of course. You know, I don't know why we can't just admit that some groups are doing the right thing and trying to organize for peace, like the Green Party, like, you know, the Jewish Voice for Peace, like these other groups. And these other groups, like the Democrats and the Republicans, don't want to speak out for peace in that very public way of putting their name on a march for peace bothers them. You know, and most people I know do not want to send their children off to war. Most people I know do not want us to continually spend money to slaughter people overseas. Most people I know do not want to subsidize oil companies and oligarchs. Why do no politicians see this? What the hell's wrong with this?
I don't know. I mean, all right, I will say in their defense, they said it like as if, you know how like nonprofits can't participate in any not like partisan things?
Nonprofits, yeah.
Right. So that was exactly the kind of ethic policy that Cory Booker said that he had. He said that he has the same ethics policy at like a nonprofit, and he couldn't be part of the march because we were organizing it. If it was a organized by, like, say we had a Green Party nonprofit,
right,
and that nonprofit organized the march, he could have been there. And maybe he would have been there.
Well, then you know what? He can just go to the next Democratic Party peace march. When is that?
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. there were some votes done recently that didn't like the, what was it, the $700 million...
Billion. 780 something. $7 billion. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a crazy way to run a country to dump almost 60% of discretionary spending into slaughtering people, into killing people. And I don't think, and you know, it's been highlighted in a number of controversies like the American flag protests that are going on. It wasn't about a goddamn flag and veterans, but we've turned that into somehow glorifying the military. It was about black people being murdered. It was about black people trying to get somebody to pay attention to them. And we turned it into this support your military thing. I mean, we screw a lot of things up in this country.
Yeah.
One issue I wanted to talk to you about before I let you go is a state issue I hear a lot about. And, you know, I'm down in Trenton quite a bit, so I do hear the buzz. But I got to be honest with you, it still confuses me a little bit. Is this what they call the fair funding formula? What was the fair funding formula? What is the fair funding formula? And what should the fair funding formula be?
So I'll have to say that the fair funding formula is not awful in its premise. The idea is that there is a certain amount of money that all districts should be spending on their students in order to provide fair and adequate education, okay? And the state should reallocate the money to districts who don't make enough money in their tax base to pay for it themselves. The state should subsidize those towns. Like if their taxpayers can't provide an adequate budget, then the state will come in and help them out. That's not a bad idea.
No.
What ended up happening, though, is in BRIC, we are going to lose $22 million off of our budget, which is massive. You know, that's a lot of programs. It's a lot of teachers.
$1 million out of it. What was your total annual
budget? I think our whole budget is 187.
So that's roughly 10%, 11%,
12%.
Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a big hole.
It's a huge amount of money. And we were massively damaged, Bricktown specifically, and also Toms River were massively damaged in Superstorm Sandy. So we don't have the same tax base that we did, you know, before the storm. But they are saying that we do. And our tax base, our people, our constituents, the people who live in our communities are mostly seniors, living on a fixed income, and working class people. And raising their taxes enough to cover that $22 million is not even possible. We're going to lose the $22 million over 7 years. Every year, we're mandated by the state to raise taxes 2%. So we don't even have the option. School boards usually can vote whether or not to raise taxes. The severe funding formula now says we have to raise the taxes. Every year, we're going to raise it 2%. But even if we do that, even if we raise our budget every year by 2%, we're still not going to recoup that $22 million. And that means that our programs are probably what's going to happen is our programs and our teachers and our facilities are going to fall behind because we can't keep up when we're losing this much money. Mm. And so good news is Hozafel put out a bill that says that if you've been substantially damaged in Superstorm Sandy, then you shouldn't be getting your funding cut for school boards. So I'm doing everything I can to promote, to help Hozafel with his bill. It's right now, it's in the education committee. The education committee chairs have to decide whether or not to present it to the education committees for them to review. And then the education committee has to review it and decide whether or not it makes it to the floor. So right now I'm doing a letter writing campaign to the education committee chairs in the assembly and the Senate. And I'll give you a link once I get it. And as soon as anyone can write their letter, and hopefully that these people on the education committee will bring it to the education committee, listen to our public comment, and then get it on the House and Senate floor.
Yeah, well, we will definitely post those links and help out the effort. I don't know that much about it. In a perfect world, you know, how would we fund schools? You know, because I do understand that, you know, there are communities losing and winning in this. They are saying that communities that are generally considered underprivileged are going to get more help. Do you find that to be true? I mean, is it kind of pitting communities against each other kind of strategy? Feel like
that's the problem, is because everybody needs money for their kids' education. So it's hard for us to be like, well, this community needs more kids' money for their kids' education. What they're basically saying is that if your community makes enough money in their, if our house is worth a certain amount of money, if our community makes enough money with the value of our property is worth enough, then we should be able to tax the community members more and the state should have to subsidize less. But if your property is not that valuable and there's no way to get the money, then the state should come in and subsidize. So I don't know, this is kind of a radical idea, but my idea is that what if we didn't use property taxes to fund schools? And they did, because then there wouldn't be such thing as poor district and risk districts. All districts would be equal. What if we used our income tax, our regular taxes? It's kind of a crazy idea, but then it makes us all equal. We all get taxed based on our income, just like we normally do. We would get taxed more, but then anyone who owns property would get taxed a significant portion less. Because your school, the amount of money the schools take off in your property tax is like 70% of your property tax.
Oh, yeah. Everybody knows that the schools eat up such a large
tax. It's almost all of it. The town really doesn't take that much money. Right. So say the money wasn't taken out of your property. Say it was taken out of your income instead. Then you would, of course, tax the wealthy more, tax the, you know, middle class middle, and tax the, lower income people less or not at all. So hopefully that makes us all equal. When our school funding comes in, we all get the same amount. You know, I mean, they all distribute the money equally to all the different kids in all the different schools. If they already have this fair funding formula that says exactly how much each district needs to pay in order to give a fair and adequate education, then they can just give that money to each district with a fair funding formula amount. And then we would all have exactly what we need.
There are differences between community needs. So, you know, So you would say that would be part of that distribution plan, right? To say, well, listen, $10,000 a year to educate a child in BRIC, but it may cost a different child in, you know, with different needs in a different community, it may cost $25,000, $30,000.
Right. So a kid in a low income community might have trauma, yeah, have been experienced trauma. They may have, so the kids in those communities might need more, programs to learn about mindfulness, breathing exercises. Like, they might need more funding in order to cover the kind of programs you need to prevent trauma. So absolutely, different districts need different amount of money. That's already all worked in this fair funding formula. They already did it. I don't know whether it's the magic formula or not, but they've already done it. And they already determined that, you know, certain district needs this amount. And then, of course, special needs kids need more services, so they get more funding. It's based on your population growth. I don't know. It's an idea. I have looked into it. No other state does it. So It's pretty radical.
Good. I mean, that's what we need. I think we need radical ideas out there. I have little faith in what goes on in Trent. And I have little faith that we have the political will to do radical things in any part of our society. Education, and education's very sensitive. These are people's children, and it's hard to do radical things anywhere. But in education, you got to have a lot of political will in order to make big changes. And I don't see it. I see a bunch of people who just got a job. So we need more people like Jessica, I think, at both the school board level, but at other levels. And I think once we start to develop this progressive thought, and I'll throw a party out the window, although I think party plays into it quite a bit, and elect people who can at least talk about these things, and hopefully we'll get this stuff more into the ether. And I think you proved, Jessica, that you can change things just by campaigning. Like you said, you walked in the door and your main campaign promise was filled by people before you even got there. That's a great tribute to you, and a good plug for the Green Party.
Thanks.
It is. You know, we're real proud of what you've accomplished. We're going to wrap it up here, but before we go, I want to make sure you get any information, last minute thank you, shout outs, whatever you'd like to say before we say goodbye. Let the world know.
Okay, so come to the march. That's what you should do. Come to the March for Peace. It's on September 15th. It's at 1:00. Please come to the march. The more people there, the more impact we'll make. And like I said, there's going to be some really great speakers. We got a whole bunch of speakers from a whole different groups. It's going to just be fun to listen. And there's the Solidarity Singers are coming, so we're going to have a little entertainment too.
Always fun.
And I really, I hope that you come. It's September 15th, it's Saturday. I made it on a Saturday specifically so that working class people can be there, so that I can be there. Please come, 1:00 at the Ocean County Library.
Thanks, Jess. For those of you out there that have listened to us before and you like what Jessica says and you like what our other guests say when they come here on NJRR, we're trying to get things outside of the mainstream content, outside of the mainstream narrative, and bring it to you here specifically about New Jersey. I can't think of a better guest to have than Jessica Clayton. So if you want to support that work, please make a contribution. I just posted the link in comments. $25 runs a whole week of NJRR. $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever you got, we appreciate it, and we thank everybody that has chipped in so far. Jessica, thank you so much for being here. You're a hero of mine. I think you've been a really great representative of the Green Party and the potential that exists when people step up and do things a little outside of the mainstream. I know you and your family are extraordinarily proud, and I can't wait to see what comes next. I'm excited.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. Good night.
Bye.